This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, let's do the Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That's I Feel That Old Age Coming On by Wanani Harris. A little long-distance dedication to my brother Micah, whose birthday is today.
Oh, that's nice. How old is he?
36, I think.
Oh,
hopefully I did the math right on that.
Hardly. So, all right, you wrote about the Grizzlies' defeat last night. What'd you make of it?
I mean, a 12-point loss at Indiana when they're at full strength is not, broadly speaking, a big deal. Like the Pacers are a really good team, and they were at home, and they had all their guys, and, like, you know, you lose by 12 and, like, whatever. I think there was some stuff in the process of getting there that was you know, more troubling than the outcome, really. You know, you give up 50 points in the second quarter, and your defense just sort of is non-existent for a big stretch of the game. And then Ja has a really bad game in a moment where everyone's sort of just waiting for Ja to, like, be Ja more consistently again. He comes out of, you know, the break, having had the week off, and just was, you know, one of his lesser games of the season. And so I think those two things in particular jump out.
Yeah. Well, let's take the 50-point quarter first. There, Taylor Jenkins was talking about what coverages? What was the quote? Like, what was it? I think
it was transition defense,
yeah.
And their communication on transition defense. And they tried to switch up some stuff to improve it, and he thought the execution and communication still wasn't there when they tried to make adjustments to what was going wrong to begin with.
And then let's be honest, most of this just comes down to Ja. Like the vibes have been, as you've wrote about a month ago now, it feels like, have been interesting or troublesome or however you want to phrase it around Ja. And then the news comes out yesterday. Obviously, the burglary wasn't yesterday, but it became public that Ja was the target of the burglary yesterday. I don't know that affected him. We're all just speculating.
I doubt that has anything to do with anything
yeah.
relative to the basketball team. Yeah.
Jeffrey, and maybe it's irresponsible for us to theorize, Jeffrey does wonder if physically there is something wrong with Ja. Do we have any sense as to physically, or is this, what do we think is happening with Ja?
I wrote about this several weeks ago. I mean, right. It's a confluence of things, and no one can say for certain because we're not Ja Morant.
Right.
Obviously, he has had multiple injury situations this season and have caused him to miss games. The hip thing and the shoulder thing both seem to be, like, fairly meaningful injury things, and the shoulder thing was related, not related, but it's the same shoulder on which he had surgery, apparently a different injury, but you got to imagine, like, you know, that there's some relationship there in terms of maybe soreness or degree to which, you know, it's not irrelevant. It was the same shoulder is what I'm saying. So there's that. I mean, there's the questions about his style of play relative to his body type and like the wear and tear on that from the beginning. There's people have wondered about, you know, him integrating into an offense that's slightly different and that maybe takes him out of his comfort zone a little bit more. The overall outcome of the offense has been as good, if not better, than it was before. And I don't really want to go too far down the road of speculating about non-basketball stuff, but it may be that there's like, you know, personal stuff that wears on you too. And so, you put all that stuff together, and I think Ja has been someone whose game is impacted by his mood almost more than vice versa. And so, I think there's lots of stuff there.
Yeah. What's interesting, too, is that there have been moments this year where, and as you've pointed out, we may have seen the best version of Ja in terms of the balance between running the offense, being commanding, and that we've ever seen. Right? I mean,
yeah, he's had great games. He's had plenty of great games this season. Those great games have not been the huge explosive scoring nights.
Right.
He's had lots of, 26 point, 11 assists, playing great basketball, team winning big. Like, there's been lots of great Ja games this year. But it has not been consistent in terms of availability or production. And they're going to play another game tonight, and they're going to play another game this weekend, and we can have a conversation on Monday and see if things feel better or worse.
Right.
But, that was, first game back, first day back at work after vacation. I know re-entry feels rough for me in those situations. So, we'll see if he comes out and plays poorly and the team plays poorly again tonight and then again this weekend in Cleveland, which is a rough, these are hard games, at Orlando and at Cleveland.
Right.
But if you get bad job performances and bad team performances, beyond just losing games, if you get bad performances, I think there's going to be a lot of restlessness come Monday on that. So, yeah, we'll see. Obviously, the Ja thing is under the microscope right now.
Yeah. It's interesting. From the Indiana perspective, I saw people tweeting, he was in Nemb hell, I guess is what they call it. And I don't know whether you credit Andrew Nembhard for part of that, too.
Nembhard under the radar has been among, I was actually fiddling with some stuff yesterday and this morning. I may write about for next week about this idea of Jaron, having a chance to get a second defensive player of the year. So I was looking around the league at all defense candidates, and Nembhard is on the list.
Yeah.
He is among the half dozen or so, all evidence suggests he's been among the half dozen or so, maybe better defensive guards in the league this season. So Indiana, not really a good defensive team, but they do have a good defensive guard to guard Ja and Nembhard. But I don't think, this is Ja Morant we're talking about. I don't think Nembhard locked him up,
Right.
So I think it's more about Ja.
Yeah. Anything else particularly in the rotation that struck you last night?
I mean, I wonder, and again, I've gotten self-conscious about it because it feels like I'm piling on or whatever, but there's such a disconnect between what people think is happening with Gigi Jackson and what's happening with Gigi Jackson.
Yes.
I mentioned I was doing some research on Jaron, and I was looking at one stat site and looking at on-court, off-court defensive ratings league-wide, and I accidentally hit the button to flip it to reverse the order, and Gigi Jackson was dead last in the entire NBA among players who played 100 minutes. So I just dead last for the Grizzlies, and it was a distant dead last. I think that it's an interesting question for them. If something doesn't change in the next couple of weeks relative to performance, how long do you keep doing this? Do you keep giving him, there's a question of what you expect to get from him long term in his career, and I think that's a lot. Then there's the question of what you expect to get from him this season in terms of this year's playoffs, and I'm real skeptical on that one. And how long do you keep giving the 15 to 20 minutes in the rotation every night if he's a drag on your team defense, game after game after game? I think, and you could either play a 9-man rotation, which will probably do that or less in the playoffs anyway, or you got Scottie Pippen over there and you got Jay Huff and you got, other guys. And so I wonder about that.
All right. So they got Orlando tonight. Orlando played last night, beat Atlanta. Trae Young was complaining about the officiating after that one. Orlando's healthy now too. It's interesting. Neither of these teams, Indiana, Indiana's been, didn't have the best start ever, but now they've been very good lately. And Orlando obviously went through huge injury issues. but they're back and healthy. What's happening with the Orlando
Jalen Suggs is not back from they have not issued their injury report for tonight's game as of this morning. But Jalen Suggs has been out for the last several weeks. He's presumed still out tonight. So, like, that's their best guard and certainly their best defensive guard.
Yep.
So there's no, like, Andrew Nimhard to guard John Moran or whatever tonight. They still have other good defensive guards, because he was Caldwell Pope, Anthony Black. That's a team that has been shaky lately. But when we talk about the Grizzlies struggling against the best defenses around the league, that's the top-rated defense in the East. And so, like, that's an interesting test for the Grizzlies tonight. Like, you know, are they going to throw the ball all over the floor and turn it over? And is Ja going to struggle again? All of that, because it's second night of a back-to-back on the road against the top-level defense.
And then the other news yesterday was the stunning news about Wemby out for the year.
I thought you were going to say the stunning news about Lamar Stevens, and I was going to wonder about that. But yes, Wemby.
Okay, fine. We'll clean up Lamar Stevens. Grizzlies waived. I wasn't actually going to get to Lamar Stevens, but the Grizzlies did waive Johnny Davis and picked up Lamar Stevens. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Lamar Stevens, if you remember, is a guy who was sort of, he was the contract the team acquired last season when they shipped Xavier Tillman for some second round picks. They ended up keeping him. He ended up playing a little bit for that team, and they really liked him. He impressed, I think, the coaching staff and the organization to the degree that I think they even contemplated, you know, maybe bringing him back this season, which they ended up not doing. He's been in the G League all year, and they signed him to a 10-day, but it's a 10-day. He signed him to a 10-day because you don't need to do anything else right now, but I think there's a good chance he ends up on the team for the rest of the season. And so a guy they're already familiar with, a guy who's got some experience, who can fit in. He doesn't need to play. But if you feel like you have some game where you just need someone more physical off the bench to throw in for a few minutes and, like, you know, play some defense, he's a guy who can do that. So I think a good signing.
And then the Wemby stuff. Obviously, that was tough news. Thoughts on Wemby?
Yeah, you just hope that big picture, like, it, that, you know, everything that's coming out of San Antonio is optimistic about the long-term prognosis of it. And you certainly hope that is accurate and that is the case, because Wemby has a chance to be one of the great players ever in the league, and you want that to be the case. And so the short term of that is, you know, you hope all goes well for Wemby, and you also hope the Spurs don't luck out and get Cooper Flagg as a result. So you hope
right
for both of those things. So those are the two things you're hoping for. And then, you know, from a selfish Grizzlies perspective, it does take Wemby off the board in terms of all NBA and defensive player of the year. And I think Jaren was already headed for a likely, not certain, but likely all NBA. And now he's, like, going to be very much in the mix for a defensive player of the year.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Before this yesterday, I was reading about all NBA stuff, and most of the folks who I was reading about were thinking that Jaren was probably going to be all NBA. So for the significance for the Supermax, he may have already achieved that or have been.
Well, he has to hit the 65-game mark, too. Like, he has to hit it. He's not there yet. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed, knock on wood, all of that. But first, in terms of the defensive player of the year, who are the other leaders now that Wemby's out?
I feel like if you look at it objectively, which I did or tried to do last night, this morning, it should be a Jaren Jackson Jr., Evan Mobley race. I wonder if people will build a case for someone else. Like, are people going to – the Thunder are the best defense in the league by far, but it's such a team-wide effort. Like, are people going to, like, choose someone, like Lou Dort or someone, to be the avatar of that team defense to elevate him? Amin Thompson is sort of spectacular, but the statistical case is a little bit more mixed. But is there going to be a case that coalesces around him? I can see one of those two guys as sort of a spoiler. But based on the actual evidence, like, you know, there was a clear top three to me, and that was Wemby, Jaren, and Evan Mobley, and now Wemby's off the board. So to me, it should be a Jaren Jackson Jr., Evan Mobley.
And are they close? Are they close when you look at the...
I think they are close. The thing that jumps out, Jaren's versatility defensively, like, if you look at the typical big man stuff, how many shots you can test, your impact on team defense at the rim, all of that kind of stuff, like, they're very similar. You expand it out, and Jaren, like, does all this perimeter stuff, too. Like, he just gets way more steals, way more deflections, way more disruptive stuff on the perimeter, while still doing all the big man stuff. And that was the case when he won Defensive Player of the Year a few years ago, too. Like, his blocks are down, But I think it's sort of a misunderstanding, the idea that he won that award a few years ago just because he had all the blocks. I mean, it was a much deeper case than that. And that deeper case is still there for Jaren. And so I was surprised when I got into it. And again, I'll probably write about it next week. The case was for Jaren was even stronger than I thought it would be.
Okay. And I know you finally did write about this the other day, but I wasn't here when you talked about it. In terms of the Grizzlies and their contractual future, is it good news or not good news for Jaren to be either All-NBA or Defensive Player of the Year?
I think it's subject to interpretation, but my interpretation is that it's ultimately good news. I think the extra cost is worth less risk, basically. Right. And so I think if he makes All-NBA, they're locking him up this summer. That's just going to happen. And if he doesn't make All-NBA, they still might lock him up this summer, but they might not. And if they don't, and it goes into next summer, like it goes another year, they still would probably lock him up even then, but maybe not. And I just think they would rather just eliminate all doubt and make it happen this summer. And so, you know, the question will be, if he makes All-NBA, does he just get the full ride with all the raises every year, all the bells and whistles, the whole shebang? Or does he negotiate with them to something just a little bit under that? I think that matters, but it doesn't matter so much that you're interested in risking it. So I think the team would like to see him get All-NBA and just lock it all up, and that's probably for the best.
It's sort of interesting because there's only 8 Supermaxes in the entire league right now. And let's be honest, as good as he is, like, there's another level that is getting Supermax.
He's not Jokic.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so, let's see, it's Giannis and Embiid and Jokic and Lillard and Booker and Tatum and Brown and Kat. That's who it is. And he is of a, you know, he fits with Brown and whatever. He's better than some, I guess. So
he's actually very much comparable to a lot of those
guys.
The other part of that is that some of those teams, like, are those good contracts.
No, they regret them. Some of them regret them.
That's right.
And so, but I think when you're in small market Memphis, and whether who knows what's happening, you know, he's become the best player on the team. I think you just want to be happy locking him up, right?
You layer onto all that, he's still 25 years old.
Right.
And so you're not doing the contract that takes him into his mid-30s. Like, you're getting him through his 20s. He is a two-way impact player. Like, he's not just a guy who scores. He is also an absolute rock off the court.
100%.
For you, he's like an A-plus person, you know, as in terms of what he means to your franchise beyond just basketball. You put all of that stuff together, I think they'll do whatever they need to do to be in the Jaren Jackson Jr. business for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. All right, Chris, I guess that's it. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, happy birthday to your brother. So, Jeffrey, in terms of last night, by the way, now in the wake of the Four Nations stuff, you know, we talked about would you want to have for the NBA. We talked about you instead of having the NBA versus the world, you know, should they take a lesson from the NHL, right?
Mm.
But the new thought would be that I've seen bounced around is that a Four Nations NBA tournament with France, Australia, Canada, and the U.S., would that not be dramatically more interesting than an All-Star weekend?
I think the answer is yes. I still contend, though, it's going to depend on, A, everyone playing. Also, you're leaving out 2 of the best players in the world.
Well, that's a problem. That is a problem. You are leaving out
yep.
You're leaving out Giannis. You're leaving out Jokic.
And Luka.
Maybe you have to qualify somehow for the
way they did it in the NHL was they took the IIHL rankings.
Is that what they did?
And then removed Russia.
Well, maybe that's what maybe you have some way of doing it. Here's what I believe. I believe that Canada, France, and Australia in that circumstance would want to kick ass, right?
I agree with you.
They just would. And therefore, if the Americans didn't want to kick ass, they would have their ass kicked, which would make them want to kick ass. The difference is hockey, I think, needed to do what it needed to do because it needed to create interest in its sport. Let's be honest. Hockey, which was always the fourth sport, football, basketball, baseball, mm-hmm. and then hockey. Now there's women's basketball. There's certainly college football. There's soccer. There's women's college basketball. Here's the truth. If you're just paying attention to ESPN, you hear dramatically more about women's college basketball than you do about the NHL.
100%.
And so they had to do something to elevate their sport, whereas the NBA didn't really have to.
No, I think that's fair. I've also wondered about this. Auston Matthews, I looked it up. He's the highest paid player at $13.5 million per year.
Yeah.
I'm not saying no one's crying for Auston Matthews. But when you compare that, that's not even a mid-level exception in the NBA. I think the NBA has a real problem where these guys are making so much money and teams are sitting there going like, hey, man, we're not paying you $350 million to get hurt in an international exhibition.
But that's the same, though. Like, if you're not even the money. If you lose Auston Matthews and you're Maple Leafs, you're dead, you know, and they really exist to win a Stanley Cup. By the way, Auston Matthews, not great for the U.S. last.
Okay, I want to take up for him.
But he was hurt. He was very clearly
Well,
hurt.
No, I also want to take up for him. I felt like, yes, offensively.
He created the first goal.
He assisted on both.
Yeah.
But also, I felt like he was an animal getting back and saving shots.
He was good. He was good.
But he just didn't score goals. I saw a lot of people out there saying he's Canadian anyway because he's just had too much maple leaf in him. I thought he was like busting it, and it's just he didn't score goals.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, we're gonna take a break.
But I don't care. It was an exhibition.
Back in a moment. Jeff Gawkett, your 92.9 FM ESPN.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We are further exploring the Four Nations idea during the break, Four Nations NBA tournament. And Jeffrey went and looked at the FIBA rankings.
Correct. We got a problem.
We got a small problem here. Who's going to be in it, Jeffrey?
So, Jeff, the U.S., number one in the world, no surprise.
That's
after
good.
after the Olympics.
Yeah.
The problem is the countries that you mentioned, only the U.S. and France are in the top four. Number one, the U.S. Number two, Serbia. Number three, Germany. Four, France. Five, Canada. Seven, Australia. Spain is even ahead of them.
So, it's been... I've gotten... There are those who think it should be versus the world. Here's my problem with the world, okay?
They're too good.
No, it's not. That is true. They also are better. Like, the world is more talented than the United States, right?
Yes.
Okay?
They'd be favored.
Don't think that's... To me, the other problem is would the world... Like, what inspired Connor McDavid last night was putting on a Canada jersey, not a world jersey. You know what I mean?
We see this issue in the President's Cup. Where it's the U.S. versus the internationals. Well, Some guys are from Korea. Some guys are from Australia. Some guys are from South America.
So you think the Ryder Cup, Europe is okay?
Because
people want to play for Europe, but they don't want to play for the world?
Yes, because the Europeans had their own
culture. There is a thing.
It's rooted in, okay, well, they used to have their own tour. And yes, the tour exists, but it's been folded in. But when they all come over and play together, like they stick together as more of a close-knit thing.
All right, a few other things I wanted to get to while we're at it today before we make way for Jason and John. One is spring football games continued to be canceled,
yep.
Right? Most recently, Texas.
Well, we had fall football games canceled today, too.
We had what?
Nebraska canceled their 26-27 series with Tennessee.
Oh, they did?
Yes, so we're having fall football games canceled.
Fall as well, yes. As spring canceled. So, what do you make of spring football games being canceled, and is something lost, Jeffrey?
So my instinct on is something lost, no.
Well, okay. First of all, what do you think the reasons are?
So what I believe is happening is that it is an attempt to get the calendar. What I think they're going to do is they're going to get rid of spring football, and the portal period is going to be in the spring. I think that's what they're going to try to do. To avoid the overlap.
Right. So the reasons right now you hear are we don't even have our team together at this point, right? And or like it used to be that you'd have your team together and that would be your team and they would play. And you know, there might be a few players who transferred in who couldn't start, who didn't get academically eligible, and the freshmen who didn't come in early, they'd be added
sure.
in fall camp. But otherwise, basically you had your team together and you could run them out there. Now, you're just assembling the damn team. And so it's unwieldy to do it. Now, the Nebraska, Matt Rhule said he also didn't want to do it because he felt like everyone was scouting his players and then pirating.
Sure, Matt.
You don't believe that. You didn't believe that one.
He basically was saying, I'm not giving you free film.
Mike Norvell, now they have a stadium issue. That's why they're not doing it this year. But he sort of said the same. He made some indications the same thing. Well, here's the other thing. No one wants to waste a day of practice because you're having to assemble a team from freaking scratch, and that counts as one of your days of practice, doesn't it?
Yes.
And no one wants to waste a day 15, of practice.
I think it's 15 practices.
Yeah. And so no one wants a day of practice. I think, is something lost? Well, I mean, there are places, at Alabama, at Tennessee, wherever, like spring football game has meant something. It has been a thing. It has been a part of the tradition of college football, the spring game, right? So I think there's something lost. This is a big thing lost.
I think
compared
it was
to all the
I
other
think it
things
was lost that, before yesterday.
It didn't matter anymore.
No. Look at how many teams weren't even teams were kind of doing Pro Bowl games.
That's true. They were doing crappy little
games. If you told me this is like it was in the 90s or even the early 2000s where the orange and white game or you pick your
right.
school where it was a weekend and it was okay, this is our chance to go watch our team. If it were still that, I would agree with you, but it's not.
It was
not
also
that.
In many ways a day to promote college football,
sure.
and to make college football relevant. It's spring. We want to put it uppermost in people's minds, even though this is the off season. And the truth of the matter is now so much is happening in college football, it's uppermost in people's minds all the time. You don't need the PR pop or whatever it was,
attention.
Exposure or attention that spring football gave you. Anymore. So it appears that spring football is going away. Yesterday, down in spring training, a robot overruled a umpire for the first time. What are your thoughts? The average challenge took 17 seconds. You get two per team per game. If it's successful, you retain the challenge. You get another one. But you can have a computer robot overruling balls and strikes.
So I've seen it. I've not watched spring training, but I've seen it in the minor leagues how it works. I am in general of I am. I guess I'm in the minority. I don't love us trying to make everything just about getting a perfect call, whatnot.
Right.
Of all the replay systems, this one I think is the most seamless. The way it works is If a hitter disagrees, he taps his helmet,
right,
and then it's
tennis. Tennis is not disruptive.
Correct.
Tennis replay is not disruptive.
Correct.
It's not guys walking over and putting a cloth over their head 100%. And looking at a whatever else. So, okay. Also in Major League Baseball, ESPN and Major League Baseball have agreed to part ways or to opt out. They're each, quote unquote, I'm not breaking up with you. You're breaking up with
right.
me.
You know, whatever.
It's
mutual.
It is mutual. ESPN is breaking up with MLB. This is not for this year, for the ensuing season, because they didn't want to pay. Because paying $550 million is too much when Apple's paying $85 million for baseball and Roku is paying $10 million for baseball. Paying $550 million is too much. Now, mind you, they're different products.
Apple's not getting playoff games.
They got different things, but still, they didn't want to pay that much. What was interesting to me was that Rob Manfred, the Major League Baseball commissioner, said that baseball has not been pleased with the minimal coverage outside of live games.
Yep.
And I could certainly see that. Like, you turn on any...
It's what you just literally mentioned. Like, look at the coverage of... Like, you can... Multiple times a week, ESPN goes live at a big women's college basketball game. I guarantee if we broke down minutes, women's college basketball is promoted more than baseball. I'm not making a moral judgment, but if you're Rob Manfred and you are in the business of Major League Baseball...
And it's not even... Yeah, and it's that they're talking about it on the debate shows more.
Sure.
You know, you just don't hear Stephen A. Smith talking about baseball.
No, unless right? it's the Yankees.
Yeah, unless it's so. I understand their irritation. Honestly, as someone who likes hockey, I've always been irritated with hockey. All they do is talk about football, and then lately, the NBA and I mean the football, and then the NBA with personalities, and now women's basketball.
But I do wonder if hockey's a cautionary tale because hockey got fed up with
and
the,
left, and the, it,
and
it
then they came back.
Them. It totally screwed them. Okay, then the other thing I wanted to talk about was. It was a piece yesterday over at ESPN about who's the next reclamation project for quarterbacks in the NBA. Okay?
NFL.
In the NFL. And you look at some, of course, NFL. This is what happens when my brain gets ahead of I'm looking. You look at some who have been successful, who fit that description. You've got Geno Smith, right? Drafted by the Jets. Winds up as a successful quarterback in Seattle, right? Baker Mayfield, obviously, goes to the Browns, goes to Rams, Panthers, winds up in Tampa. Tampa, very clearly successful quarterback in Tampa. Successful reclamation project. Sam Darnold, I think, certainly counts, although it's 1 year, and so I think there's a little bit. I don't think you can call him yet a successful, because you wonder how much is system and receiver specific with Sam Darnold.
Yes.
But
you and I aren't ruling it out.
No, not ruling it out. Another one who fits, Ryan Tannehill.
Sure.
I think Ryan Tannehill was once upon a time, you know what the Titans had to give up for Ryan Tannehill?
I think it was like a seventh or a sixth.
A fourth.
I mean, he came in to be the backup.
He came in to be Mariota's backup.
Yeah.
And he turned out to be a terrific quarterback, really. For the Titans. Jared Goff, very clearly.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought Goff, it wasn't like Goff was bad in L.A. They basically just decided, like, we're upgrading.
Right. So then you have other quarterbacks who didn't make it. Like, maybe this could be a reclamation project. Here's some who were not.
All right.
Carson Wentz.
Yeah. Most assuredly. Although I would argue he's never that good to begin with.
Justin Fields.
Yes.
Same. Not so far, anyway.
No, I'd say the same thing.
Jameis Winston?
Jameis is an interesting case study because, unlike the other guys, I think Jameis is capable of playing. But Jameis has one fatal flaw.
He's Jameis.
It's the turnovers.
Right. And then others who are mentioned, but of course there could be many others, or just quarterbacks who were drafted who didn't work out, like Josh Rosen would have fit our old friend Paxton Lynch. Where did he go after? He did end up
Seattle?
In other places.
Paxton or Rosen?
Paxton.
Paxton went to Seattle for a cup of coffee.
Trubisky's another one. Like, Trubisky would have been a perfect reclamation candidate.
Yeah,
if Mitch, he were any good.
Mitch also made such a great business decision. I'm going to be Josh's best friend. So I'm gonna have a job for life.
So the question is, what as you're looking for this, what should like what separates them? What separates the successful and the unsuccessful, right? So one is thought is you have to look at the previous stops and why they failed, right? Look at Mayfield, look at Geno Smith. It's easy to blame their surroundings for why they failed.
It's usually started at a bad franchise.
Started at a bad franchise, right? I think is one.
I think Baker's a little bit different case study. I would argue Baker played through injury, and a coach that was worried about losing his job made the decision, I'm scapegoating Baker, and then they go and they get a quarterback in Deshaun Watson, and now it's tanked the franchise.
Another one is, obviously, well, there's a lot of focus on the coaching where they land.
100%.
Right? But, at least in this piece, they're making the point, coaching clearly matters, but you know what else matters? Receiver play. And if you look at the successful reclamation projects that we mentioned, you've got Ryan Tannehill. He was throwing to A.J. Brown. You got Mayfield.
And had Derrick Henry.
He was throwing to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin.
Sometimes.
You got Darnold sometimes. You got Darnold. He's throwing to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison.
Yes.
You got Geno Smith is throwing to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett.
Yep.
And Goff, not so much, but now I mean, St. Brown. Yeah,
Amon Ra's a good player. Breakout.
Yeah.
Yes. And also Goff went behind. Now Goff gets to play behind, you know, truly an elite offensive line.
And then you look at, and again, who knows? Like, I'm not saying that Wentz would have been different, but in Indy, he's throwing to Michael Pittman Jr., you know? Fields throwing to George Pickens sometimes. Most of the time?
Yeah, I mean, Fields was throwing to whoever was on the one side of the field that he was looking at.
In other words, or hell, if you look at the Panthers, right? Like, Baker Mayfield was throwing to, who was he throwing for? For like, when Darnold goes there and Mayfield goes there to the Panthers,
so they
neither one was good. They're throwing to DJ Moore.
And I believe the ghost of Adam Thielen.
But not much, right?
No, this was always my contention when people were trying to bury Bryce Young. It's like, yo, look what's out there.
Well, that's the other question. So then there's this other thought that it's also sometimes good to take a break.
Yes.
That you need the break. You need the break
in between. We talked about this in the fall. It was not, everyone acted like sitting Bryce Young down was going to be the death of him. You're ruining him. It's like, no, sometimes you just need a 30.
And most of these players take the break where they go be a backup somewhere else, right? Their break is not at the same place with Bryce Young. His break was
go
with
sit
the
on
Panthers.
The sideline for a little bit.
Right. That's unusual. It's usually take a break by bouncing somewhere else, and then you get your other chance. It is interesting. You go back to the early days when I was focusing on this first. Jim Plunkett, actually, drafted number one overall out of Stanford by the Patriots, considered, I think he may have been rookie of the year. But then he actually was a reclamation project and won a Super Bowl with the Raiders. Rich Gannon?
Yep.
I don't know if he was a reclamation project, but I think so. I think he kind of bounced around. He was considered not a great quarterback until he ended up in Tampa, and then he became an all-pro quarterback. And then he ended up as an all-pro quarterback.
Jake DeLome, didn't he? A little bit. Yeah, no, I mean, Rich
Jake
Gannon
DeLome bounced around a bunch.
There's always, like, Randall Cunningham. Like, I don't know how you'd qualify that, but, like, Randall has his best years probably when he was with Minnesota, but he was, like, a good player. I think the larger point here is it feels like this is also a byproduct of being too impatient with quarterbacks. Like, teams are moving on more quickly, and so I do think there's perhaps a secondary market of, okay, these guys can probably, if given the right situation, a la Sam Darnold, it shows that, like, to me, I think what I learned this year is, like, the gap between the top four quarterbacks and everybody else is pretty wide, and then the difference between 5 and probably 15 is who winds up where with in what situation.
So then they finally offer who's next.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's interesting is they include Sam Darnold in who's next under the theory that he hasn't really proven 100% that he's it yet, right? That he's like Baker, I think we're confident in Baker.
Well,
is what
Baker
he is.
Got a second contract.
Right. So Sam Darnold is one, although maybe he's already successful. Justin Fields would be another. Is he still, is there still going to be? So do you have any faith in any of these guys, is my question.
Keep going.
Daniel Jones. Like, there's a perfect candidate for a guy, well, wasn't successful, highly whatever. Now, I don't know. Like, he's had, his offensive line is stunk. And then Jameis Winston is still a candidate. Zach Wilson is still a candidate. How do you feel about Daniel Jones?
So, I would actually say I'd take a little flyer on Daniel Jones. Daniel, in a little bit different way, has the same problem that Jameis has. When you watch Daniel throughout the course of a game, he's capable of playing the position, but he turns it over a lot. And the question is, can that be coached out of him? Can that, because like a part of it also,
it is interesting, it was coached out of Josh.
Well, and also part of him turning it over a lot is they asked him to do everything. Like, he's the run game. He was trying to throw, so he's like, he was just always doing too much. If he got into a situation where he could be more game management, I actually do think he could be effective because he's got athleticism and he is a good enough thrower.
All right, we got Jason and John coming up next. We do have important games this weekend, though, Jeffrey. Grizzlies got Orlando tonight. Then they go on and they play Cleveland. And the Tigers play FAU. Here's what I'm going to let you do. I am going to, out of my generous spirit,
mm-hmm.
I am going to let you guarantee one win for one Memphis team over this weekend. It can be the Grizzlies over the Magic. It can be the Grizzlies over the Cavs. It could be Memphis over FAU. You're getting to lock in one win. What are you taking?
Memphis over FAU. It's the only home game.
Yeah, but I think I have confidence they're going to have that. I'm going to take the Grizzlies over the Cavs. Because the other two, they might win anyway.
Okay, I thought you were saying my choice was I have to pick the game that's going to be the win.
No. You get to lock in.
Yeah,
you get to guarantee
then you're
100% a win.
Right. It's Cleveland.
You would guarantee the Cleveland. Okay.
Yeah.
But if we do the other way, if they were literally only to win one of these games.
Correct.
Let's be honest. We'd be in complete meltdown Monday when we came back if the Tigers lost to FAU. And if the Grizzlies, let's be honest, lose both of these.
I mean, I will say this. I was a little surprised to see their favorite tonight.
I was surprised yesterday. Honestly, they were a favorite over Indiana. Indiana's been playing well. They're at home.
Yeah, that one didn't surprise me as much. I was just
saying. Second night of a back-to-back. You're now flying to Orlando. You're playing a.
I mean, I get it. They had to fly from Atlanta. But, like, come on. It's
a little closer.
Yeah.
It's home. They will be home.
Yeah.
They'll be sleeping in their own beds.
Yeah.
It's going to be a. I'm not saying we're teetering, but
also,
we took calls today and panic and chill. It was 4-4.
And I think, though, if you could get the Cleveland win, though, that would.
Oh, it's answer so much.
Yeah,
man.
It's like, okay, they went up against a good team.
Good team won. I don't think they could do that without Ja playing well, right?
I think that's likely.
So let's hope for a successful weekend for the local lads. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Anthony Sain going to join their program as well. Tim Murray with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Blake Topmeyer is going to join us during hour number one. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Stay warm. Back Monday. Oh, wait, Jeffrey. This is when you got to get to Oak Hall. I told you this. Spring has sprung at Oak Hall, and you walk in right now, and you will feel it. So if you're feeling like you need this is getting you down, spring is on there. You walk in there, the light has been turned on, everything is beautiful, the colors are beautiful. Maybe you're heading somewhere warm, get swimwear. This weekend, I'm going to be heading to Oak Hall. I will see you there. All right, now we'll get out of here. Our work here is done.